and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are in your ears, thanks to OldFootballShirts.com. Well, on last week's show, we spent a fair amount of time explaining exactly why Glenn Murray shouldn't be playing on Saturday. But, alas, he did play, and he notched his 100th Albion goal in a 1-0 win over Wolves. It was our third 1-0 win on the spin, and the first time that we've achieved that feat in the top division since 1981. Today, we head to Goodison, where we've never won, to take on Everton, who they're being a little bit Everton at the moment. Can we make it four in a row? Also this week, the Albion ladies finally got their first win in WSL 1 on Sunday after beating Yeovil at Crawley. And they're not back in action until the 18th of November. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to be joined by a man who 10 years ago gave so much joy to so many people. It's Graham Rolfe. Hello, Graham. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing very well, thank you.
I think you gave greater pleasure to stepladders, frankly. The way he caressed them and the way he just sort of, well, eventually abused them, you know. As stepladders go, he's a beast.
It's a terrific story.
For everyone who isn't sort of, you know, everyone who's 11 years old or younger, tell us what AD's on about.
What AD's on about is when the digger appeared in the field at Falmer. On the 31st of October 2008, which was 10 years ago yesterday, I took a photo or two and put it on North Stand Chat. Thought people might be interested in this. And the next week I did some more, and then I did some more, and then 130 weeks later, and I think I took about 6,000 photos, although not all 6,000. I haven't put out them all because... a few were edited, a few were different size pixels and the rest of it. But anyway, now, the stadium is built. We've been playing in it for, what, 7 or 8 seasons, whatever it is.
It just doesn't seem right,
and,
does it?
Yeah,
it just doesn't
seem
right. You look back at that field and you think, how did it come to this? I mean,
I look back at that field and the pictures seem like they're in sepia. It seems like so long ago, but
it doesn't. When you see that field there, you think, there's almost a side of you thinks, blimey, we're destroying the countryside here, although we certainly didn't feel that at the time. And you know, it's never going to be put back, and it's there for the community. But actually, let's go back to those 10 years ago, mate. What made you do it?
I'd been looking forward to it for so long. And when it finally happened, it was just such an amazing sight to actually see. You know, this is after all the trouble and the battles and all the things the fans got up to for years, not just a short while, but quite a while.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, well, we are going to come back and talk to Graham about that a little later on. But firstly, we've just got to say, I mean, this is the house that Tony built, okay, we're going to be talking about, and with a lot of help from Dick, obviously. But our thoughts do go out to our friends at Leicester. I mean, we're speaking from a club here at Brighton, whose chairman has also done so much, not only for the club, but also for the city. So the loss of Vishai Shravad Halabraba is one that really does resonate with us at Brighton, and our thoughts really do go out to them.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no good time to go out, and yeah, it's cut off in the prime of his life. There aren't any words that we can say apart from, you know, we offer our condolences to his family and all those that are affected by it, and including the sort of the entire community within Leicester.
Yeah, I mean, you're reading in dispatches about the stuff that he's, you know, giving millions to hospitals and things like that. I mean, that's a guy who's really bought into the
community, absolutely.
And you know, there was a great piece by Henry Winter in the paper this week. He said there's some good chairman and some bad chairman, and this was a good one.
Absolutely.
And in that same article, he mentioned Tony Blue in the good section, so
sure,
that's good.
Absolutely.
And also, we just got to offer our condolences to the family of Tony Hellier, who at the age of 76 was due to attend his first game at the Amex on Saturday, but sadly never actually made it inside the ground. So no one should go to a game and not come home.
Well, absolutely. But again, and we offer our condolences as well for
indeed
that. And to lose one of your own is always sad. So yeah, yes, our deepest condolences to all concerned.
Absolutely. But let's talk about that Wolves game, though. And, Well, the big news was that we were unchanged. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, last week, Graham, I don't know if you heard last week's show, but basically we were talking about the fact Glenn Murray should not be playing in this game. And I'm still saying Glenn Murray shouldn't have been playing in this game.
Yeah, there was a chance we thought Lacadia may have been selected to play in his place and then bring perhaps Connolly onto the bench. But I was disappointed that that didn't happen, but... After seeing the game, obviously, with the win, then the manager, as always, knows more than what we do and made the right choice.
Well, I mean, there was some in dispatches. I mean, listening to various other people talking about the game, and obviously we're going to talk about Glenn getting his 100th goal and everything, and we're absolutely delighted about that, obviously. But everyone else saying, should he have actually been playing? I mean, if it was a rugby game, he wouldn't be playing. If it was a horse race, he wouldn't have been racing.
You have to bear in mind, obviously, with rugby and to a certain extent horse racing, you know, the clashes are far more frequent and far more brutal. That's not to say that rugby is going over the top in its defence of the players in question. Of course not. But theirs is far more a contact sport than football is. So you have to go with what the medical opinion says. And if the medical, as we said last week, if the medical opinion says he's playing, we just felt at the time that they were going to adhere to the similar rules that rugby would. Mm. But, you know, yeah, and Louis Miles on the show last week mentioned about sort of secondary injuries and things like that. And I think it's kind of, Glenn certainly played within himself last week. I mean, he wasn't going flying in for those headers. He was definitely pulling out. So anything that got lumped up to him, you know, where previously he'd have been crash bash battle the defender for a ball, he didn't do anything like as much as he would do. So he was clearly playing within himself.
Okay. Well, he did play, and we are going to talk about that goal very shortly. But the way that we set up in this game, Graham, was not the way we would normally set up at home. And do you think we actually gave Wolves a little bit too much respect?
Yeah, possibly, but they were very good. And at the end of the game, you go on North Stand chat, you see what other people rate the players 1 to 10, how they did. And I was doing my own in my head. And although really we were battered, nobody played bad. Mm. Bongo was terrific. Our goalkeeper was outstanding. The defence, Dunkey, Duffy. You could go through the whole team and you couldn't really pick anybody who didn't play well. Yet we were, in effect, up against the ropes for most of the game.
Mm. I mean, that's an opinion. Certainly one that's not shared in my office.
No, the point is that Wolves do play a very good fast. The main difference with Wolves is they don't have a striker, they don't have a finisher, but their approach play is very fast, very quick. I mean, ours can be. It's just that, you know, for the last three games, even though we've won, our ball retention has been absolutely shocking.
It's been a ball retention.
Sorry,
it's been a bore retention.
It has. Well, no, it's boring because we cannot keep the ball. They've been so careless and sloppy. I think that if we're going to criticise anyone, you're saying that no one played badly, but I think for those doing their jobs, I would actually query, and again, Chris is always sort of right on this score, is that the notion of the way that any one of three of Jakimbach, Izquierdo and March playing kind of behind Glenn and the rotation that they do, although March is generally playing the role just behind Glenn, it's, for whatever reason, it's either not working or it's not clicking, it's not firing. It might do it in a future game, but this is about half a dozen games where they played this way, and it's still not really happening. So whilst the defence has done a brilliant job, absolutely, the midfield cannot keep the ball, and the flair players, for want of a better term, the creative players, are not getting... It's not quite happening. I'm sure that they sit down at training and they do their stuff, but at the moment, it's not quite happening. So whilst there might be those that consider it boring, it's not as though we're setting up defensively. It's just that on the attack, we're not good enough right now.
Well so, Pascal Gross is he had a setback to his injury, so he's not going to be back for a little while.
What's up with him? Do you remember?
he got a badly bruised foot, I think, and it
was it fallen off.
I think it might have done. Oh. Yeah, but
that's gross.
Oh, very funny. But it was. I think it was there's complications with it.
Right.
But,
okay.
He's not going to be back until probably after the next international break. And David Purper the same.
Right.
So I mean, Solly March as a number 10, Graham. What do you make of that?
I prefer him out wide doing his damage out wide and then hopefully getting the ball in, which changed the subject slightly, is what Knockhart should be doing. But he always seems to want to take the man on when he doesn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a ball played to him. All you've got to do is wrap your foot around it, put it straight in.
Decision-making at a given moment,
isn't
it?
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think Marsh has been particularly effective in that role myself. I prefer Jack and Batch up.
Logic would dictate that, you know, I know that Jack and Batch was played out wide in the Eredivisie last year, but he played for Iran in the World Cup. Well, admittedly, he wasn't brilliant, but it's not a role he's unfamiliar with. He played for Iran in that kind of just behind the forward.
Andoni plays that position as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, no one is in a position to comment on Andoni at all at the moment because they haven't seen him. So as much as his stock has risen just because Lacadia hasn't done the business, we don't know what Andoni's sort of, you know, his strengths are. And I'm sure we will one day. But, you know, until then, we can't really comment on him. But Jack and Batch is, for me, the more logical person to put there, and yet, you know, it's still not quite happening. And he needs, actually, to be honest, I think Jack and Batch needs to be a lot stronger in the challenge. He is far too easily beaten to the ball. It's almost an after you. I wish actually at one point Jack and Batch would just go coming, flattening his man, just clattering him just once, just to say that, you know, he's got an eye for winning the ball.
To me, he seems to be getting better and better, slightly better. Every time he plays, he seems a bit better than the time before. And on occasions, to me, he's got a bit of El Vicente about him, the way he moves past people. And I think that we'll see a really good footballer there producing the goods for us in another few weeks' time.
And additionally, Vicente couldn't actually sort of win a strong challenge. I mean, he was always sort of kind of like that luxury ball player that you know isn't going to go and clatter anyone unless it was out of frustration. So, yeah, there is something about Jack and Batch, but I think he's got to learn the rough and tumble of the Premier League pretty sharp.
Well, he did have a chance in that first half as Albion we broke at pace. March's fizzed across just about a vase. Jack and Batch was diving in.
So he didn't really have a chance at all. We got nowhere near it. So,
but I mean, you mentioned Wolves. They play really, really beautiful football, making pretty patterns all over the pitch.
And then can't hit a barn door.
But I mean, there was a train of thought that if Glenn Murray was playing for them, they would have won that comfortably.
Yeah, but he's playing for us, and we won. So. Dems the brakes.
In front of the barn door was an incredibly inspired goalkeeper. I mean, he was outstanding. He made save after save. He was wonderful.
Absolutely.
And if it weren't for the fact that Murray scored his 100th goal, Ryan would have run away with the Man of the Match award.
To be honest, he was my Man of the Match anyway.
Yeah.
So
it was mine too.
Murray had one thing that he did in the game, and which is what he does all the time. But yeah.
Okay.
And just one more chance in the first half for us where Duffy really should have scored from Sully March's corner.
Yeah.
I thought it was in.
How many times? I'll tell you what, can we wear green at home? Because that's the only time Duffy's able to score from ahead.
He has scored twice this season. Let's not forget that.
Were they both at home? I mean, it was Man U.
No, one at home, one away.
What was the away one? Remind me.
Southampton.
Southampton, you're quite right. And a header. That's how you do it.
It wasn't a header at home.
Well, there you go. So stick him in a green shirt, he'll head it home. I mean, that you're quite right. It was a sitter and an embarrassment. And it's time. I mean, we're talking about nearly two seasons now. Two seasons worth of them not doing that. It's getting ridiculous. Well, sorry, it is ridiculous.
Graham?
Yeah, I mean, Dunkey was... It was top goal scorer, wasn't it? Was it last year? Early on in the season. But he's not on the score sheet enough for me at the moment.
Yeah, but
as long as he doesn't let any in, that's what he's there for. Yeah. So if he scores, it's a bonus, really.
Well, it's usually an own goal he scores. But he was the only defender to score last season. So
yeah.
we've got to take that. But let's move on to the landmark goal, the one that gave Glenn Murray his 100th. Now, I'm so glad it happened quickly because it could have been a stone around his neck this. But and he said himself, "I'm so glad that I've got it, and now I'm looking forward to getting 101." But Glenn Murray, what can you say?
Does anyone remember? Let's go the way back because we'll be hearing from Adam Hinshelwood later in the show, and he remembers Glenn turning up for the first time. But do you remember? Does anyone remember Glenn's first game?
Yes.
Was it Rochdale?
Rochdale home scored twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, was it Rochdale or Crewe?
Apparently, Crewe? He came on as a sub against Crewe, but his first,
oh, okay.
his first full game was
so the team that we just bought him from
was
and the first goal celebration Guy Butters organised
the Ring a Ring of Roses. Yeah,
I tell you what, I remember the Ring a Ring of Roses just for how ludicrous it was, but I do not recall that being Murray's first goal. In fact, in that case, they should have actually dovetailed it and done Ring a Ring of Roses for his 100th. Can you imagine Shane Duffy organising that?
I actually can. I really can.
But, yeah, Google it. So, yeah, it's, but no, no, it's an incredible journey. And the ridiculous thing is that he would have been easily, by a long way, way ahead of Tommy Cook, way ahead of Bert Stevens with his wartime record, if Gus, now don't get me wrong, I'm a massive fan of Gus, he's the architect of where we are now, but if he hadn't made the ludicrous decision to actually say, I don't want you in the championship, and, well, it was Glenn's choice to go to Palace. It's not as though we offloaded him to Palace, but, you know, that one sticks in the craw. The only thing, that, the main thing that actually is great about this, notwithstanding it's 100 goals and everything like that, is just how much every single goal upsets Crystal Palace fans nowadays because they feel it's their ex that's actually doing the dirty on them. No, sorry. Glenn did the dirty on us going to them. Sorry, it's the wrong way around. He's ours. He never even left the city when he was playing for Palace. So
no.
So I mean, it must be something because I mean, your Albion supporting days go back quite a long way, and you remember the fellow who's just overtaken. I mean, all the way back to Kit Napier, don't you?
I do remember Kit Napier.
Yeah,
and I remember.
Can you compare and contrast?
Kit Napier was a very delicate, dainty player. He never made a tackle. I remember an FA Cup game at Aldershot in, I think it was in 1967. In fact, it was the round before we played Chelsea, I believe.
Right.
When we had the 1-1 draw at home and then we lost 4-0 in the replay. But I was at the Aldershot. It was my first ever away game, funny enough. And the pitch was like a hippo would go and mud himself.
Wallow.
It was absolutely, yeah, wallow in the mud. It must have been about 6 inches deep with mud.
So how did the almost, dainty Kit Napier get through it then?
Oh, don't ask me, but he had this sort of magical way of just keeping on his feet, not going near anybody, and came off after 90 minutes of that game. He was spotless. Wally Gould, well, he was smothered from head to foot. But Kit Napier, yeah, he was very nice. He could score from a corner. He said, love his corners. He could score from a corner, which is something I remember.
So if you could actually come up with an equivalent for those of us who never saw Kit Napier play, and that includes me and AD, who would you most liken him to out of, say, if not current score, but out of a recent
score? Kit Napier?
Score? Yeah.
Ooh, just because I've got any delicate, nice, sort of gentle touch players.
Are we talking maybe a Solly March but without the goal scoring? Or
it's probably Peter Ward without the nippiness.
Okay.
You know, sort of that gentle, delicate, sort of almost fairy like in a complimentary way, sort of fairy like movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent player.
Because you make it sound like Craig Noon.
Because it's Kit Napier's post-war record that Glenn has just beaten. Kit was stuck on 99 at the end of his time here. He's the first post-war player to score his 100th Albion goal. There's only one player ahead of him. I'm not talking wartime stuff. There's only one player ahead of him in the all-time list. I think Glenn's got to stay to the end of next season. And actually, the form he's in, I don't have a problem with that right now, for Glenn to stay beyond the end of this season and next season, because at the moment he can still do it. Until such time as, you know, his Zimmer frame comes in on order from Argos, then, you know, keep going, mate.
Yeah, I mean he's a player that, I mean, I suspect come the end of the season he won't be starting as many games as he is at the moment.
We said,
I mean,
that this season, didn't we?
We did say that. We did say that.
And he's in the form of his life.
And I'm usually wrong. So there we go.
Well, I'm loving the fact that also, I mean, you're talking about defenders that don't score. Bruno came in for he got the assist, and it was a lovely pass in the end. But
well, it was the oldest ever
combination, wasn't it? Yeah.
Assist goal combination in the Premier League. It was
since people really started messing about with stats and
they beat the previous record, which was 72 years and 168 days, which was set by Man United duo Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes when Giggs scored against Newcastle in 2010. But the 73 years and 57 days of the Bruno Murray combination surpasses that.
Do you know what would make that record being broken even funnier? Is if in future Murray sets up Bruno for a goal. That would be funnier still. And actually, as a record, that Glenn say, well, I wasn't the goal scorer for that one.
Well, actually, it would have been if Bruno hadn't absolutely shanked that shot. And let's face it, he did.
Yeah, but I don't think it was. It didn't come off Murray before that.
Yeah, it was. It was Murray that put the ball across.
Was it?
Yeah.
No, that would have been too funny. But let's face it. That shot from Bruno was a mare, wasn't it? But having said that, you know, you leave Murray alone in the box at your peril.
And it was such a neat finish, Graham.
That's what he does. He's an incredibly neat finisher. The one, the 100th goal he scored, that lovely little side, which is in the right place at the right time. But I think the archetypal Glenn Murray goal was the one he scored against Manchester United, where somehow he wasn't even in front of the goal. He was the wrong side of one of the posts and managed to flick his foot somehow, and the ball went backwards into the goal. I mean,
an effort that could easily go wrong, isn't it?
Unbelievable goal.
What was your? What's been your favourite Glenn goal so far?
Oh dear, wow. I don't really have one. Everyone's a favourite.
Graham thinks
a
bit. You must have thought of this. So, what's yours?
Mine was. I've got a couple actually. Because they're rarities, which are Glenn Murray goals from outside the box.
Which is?
There was the goal against Swindon in the promotion season in League One, where basically he had the ball chasing down and he smashed
it across the keeper.
The top corner, which was an absolute beauty. And then there's the goal in the Championship against Aston Villa, where he actually...
He took it
did
early,
like a little miss move and managed to get and smashed it past the keeper again. But, you know, his goals are usually headed or short range. I mean, he's a poacher,
sure
isn't he?
The Swindon one? Because the Swindon one was a trundler across the keeper into
the bottom
corner.
No, he scored twice.
Oh, okay, right. I'm thinking also of a volley that he had away at Tranmere.
Oh, yes, that was a...
He smashed that one, yes.
I'm sure there's going to be a Glenn 100
and
goals.
Was it him that did an overhead kick at Wickham?
No, that was Nicky Forster.
Was it? Okay.
Oh, no, yeah.
He did do an overhead kick
at Wickham, didn't he? Yeah.
We've got 100 goals to think of here, most of which... I imagine the combined total of his 100 goals is probably not much more than about 30 yards.
See, when you start talking about them... Oh, yeah, I forgot that one.
Okay, Graham, have you remembered now?
Well, before I came, I just caught on the local news. There's a little feature on Glenn Murray because of his 100th goal, and it showed you quite a few of the goals he scored, most were when he was with Dean. And there were different goals to what he scores now. He was running 20 yards, beating players, cutbacks, things, and scoring from not massive distances, but certainly further out than what he scores them from now.
Are you suggesting that Glenn used to have some pace?
He's never ever had any pace, but he probably had a little bit more stamina, which there's a subtle difference between pace and stamina.
There's another one that springs to mind, actually, is that, again, the one he smashed into the top corner. It was a night game against Plymouth. We won 4-0. I think it was early in the second half, and he just beat his man. He'd think, where is he going to put it? And he put it in the top corner, the near post. That was kind of incredible. So, yeah, that was...
I just remember his goal at Dagenham on that incredible run in March where he won every game.
So you Johnny-come-latelys, you can remember the goals, can't you? I can't. You know, I go back
to be honest, I think that 2011 season was so exciting. It was our last at with Dean. You know, we were going places. It didn't occur to us at the time that Glenn wasn't going to be with us the next season. And it was... So, you know, the 8 wins in a row that he was obviously a major part of. The fact he scored 22 goals that season, you know, and it's kind of so weird. He's had to win so many hearts and minds back. You know, even when he was playing, there was that time that we were playing against Leeds earlier in his career where I think it was Delph just went flying past him. I think Murray had a hernia, we later realised, but he actually gave up the chase of the ball and he got dog's abuse. Mm. And, you know, he was seen as a bit lazy, was seen as not sort of like, you know, helping out, you know, and things like that. And so, you know, and the 1 in 10 Glenn and things like that. And then you get to, you know, his, you know, 5 years at Palace, which is, you know, about as worse a crime against humanity as football could ever muster. Mm. And he's had to win them over again, and I think it's brilliant that he's done what he's done. And the fact he's a hero all over again is testimony to his professionalism.
And we're absolutely delighted. And here's to the next 100, Glenn. You can do it, surely.
Yeah.
But okay, just before we move on from Wolves, there are a couple of other points we need to talk about, which was Dunk's headed clearance from the Neves free kick, which was just. That was going top corner, and he just managed to...
I'll take your word for it, I can't remember it.
Oh, it was... There's a gif of it.
Okay.
And it's... The ball was just...
It's about quarter out of goal, wasn't it?
It was
towards the end of the game. It was about quarter out of goal, wasn't it?
But the ball... It was actually Dunk that gave away the free kick, and he got booked for it
right,
as well, actually.
Okay, yes.
But, That it was curling deliciously into the top corner, and he just got his head in the way.
And your other thing you want to talk about?
Oh,
it was Ryan's save in the last minute.
I've got Matty Ryan. We're going to talk about Matty at some point again.
I think there's one thing you have forgotten in that was their first half sitter as well, when they actually just sort of powed into the block.
He was the best player.
Yeah, but you know, still can't score. So,
you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM online, at RadioReverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are delighted to be brought to you in association with AllFootballShirts.com, and Phil has provided us with yet another wonderful shirt of the week. I'm just going to hand this over to you.
He must be knocking on to 94,000 now, or something like that.
If you could just describe this for me.
Okay. Oh my giddy aunt. Yeah. Oh,
that's beautiful. That is. That's. It looks like the cross of St George in that lovely vivid red. With some chicken wire.
I was going to say stained glass, but chicken wire is better.
That is a really good description.
There's chicken wire in each canton.
Yes. That's quarter to you and me.
That's the four quarters. and then there's a badge. There's St George's Cross there in the middle. And if I could see, I'd better see what it was above there. But yeah, wire netting and St George's Cross rampant. It's quite
Well, I can see it's Red Cross. I'm just wondering if it's actually... because the badge is it is the St George's Cross, but there's also it represents the cross of Saint Ambrose, which is the patron saint of Milan. But I'm looking at the badge I can't see that badge as being Milanese. Although the sponsor seems to be Italian, so I'm going to guess. Do you want to have a guess as to where that's from?
We guess at the club, do we?
Guess at the club, or at the very least, the country. I'm going to guess it's Italian, and I reckon it's an away shirt.
Me.
And what's more, I'm going to guess it's a Milanese shirt. But what about you, Graham?
Well, I don't know. I think there might be Valletta Athletic is my guess.
Okay.
Al is the closest to this one.
Well, I've come second then. That's not bad.
This is your shirt of the week, and this is the 2018 home shirt of Padania. And they play their games in the Quinifa tournament. Now, Padania has been proposed as a name for an independent state in northern Italy. Quinifa is the Confederation of Independent Football Associations, and they expressly use the term members instead of countries or states. Many of the members represent unrecognised indigenous populations like Matebe Land, which is in Africa, Cascadia.
Matebe Land.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. Cascadia, which is actually a Canadian province, that one. Actually, Phil didn't know who that was. I do know that one.
Okay.
For example, and they include states, minorities, stateless peoples, and regions not affiliated to FIFA. Padania made it to the semi-finals of the 2018 World Football Cup, which was played in London in June. And Phil went along and watched one of the games at Carl Shelton's ground, where they gave up a 2-0 lead over the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, losing 2-3 in the end. The eventual winners of the World Football Club were Carpegiaia, a displaced Hungarian minority ousted to the Carpathian Ruentha in Ukraine. There we go. Thanks for that, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. I do love the way you've made AD trip over his words once again, but that shirt, Graham, that's a bit of a doozy, isn't it? I mean, never mind the chicken wire, but that's quite a nice shirt, isn't it?
I'd buy one.
Yeah. But actually, the whole tournament, I mean, it was quite a big thing.
He was asked to sponsor a couple of the country's shirts, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think one that they pulled out in the end, but yeah.
It was, it was a really good tournament, and it's actually gaining in popularity as a tournament, because these people, these countries that, you know, I mean, not everyone is
isn't it a case that Jersey and Guernsey, do they take part in this? Because
yeah.
I think they're not FIFA members, are they? Well, on the Isle of Man are on this, I think, as well.
So are Yorkshire.
Well, good, actually, frankly.
Yorkshire are going
to be... They're a displaced indigenous population, are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they feel, yeah. But yes, let's have a Sussex team.
The Kingdom of Sussex, yeah.
Okay, well, you eagle-eyed amongst you may have noticed that we made an announcement earlier today, which is Friday at the time of recording.
So we made it yesterday, but it was really today.
But it's a day for your diary. It's we're going live again now.
We are. Wednesday the 12th of December at the Real Alto Theatre. Now, that's at the bottom of Dyke Road, just up from the clock tower. It's the old, it's the Fozzie's Bar and things like that. Behind what used to be Gamley's, for those that remember this.
Club New York.
Yes, I mean, I used to DJ there when it was the Loft Club back in the 90s. And anyway, so...
And we also where there was an LB Raw Live featuring Nick Trepanic and Paul Hayward.
And we're actually inviting back the original two. The first one, they couldn't make it. So we've got an evening with Chris Catlin and Andy Rollings. The pair of them, good mates together. They'll be coming along and sharing a few stories from yesteryear, swapping memories of their thoughts on the what it was like then, what it's like now. Believe me, they all keep up to date with the footy. So if you fancy a trip down memory lane, hearing outrageous stories that you can't really normally put on the radio, but we're going to anyway, do come along. It's going to be, the tickets are £8 and £6, £6 for the concessions. Doors open at 7 o'clock. We start at 8. We're going to get an Albion Raw show out of it. But for those that were there at the Nick Trepanic Paul Hayward show, you realise it's a lovely little venue with a kind of very 30s-style bar, which stays up until 1:30. Don't get too excited, AD. Calm down. They were... You want to see that look across his face. It was just pure filth. Do come along. Please support the artists and come along and see these guys in action. A great evening let's put it this way. You're going to be absolutely cheesed off to the back teeth with the Christmas build-up. So this is a nice escape from it. So come along and hear these guys talking.
It's going to be a Christmas-free zone in December. Who knew?
Maybe.
Apart from I might play Donald with the Donkey, but you know. Well, absolutely. You know.
Yes, so it's an evening with Rollo and Cat. Chris Catlin and Andy Rollings, Wednesday the 12th of December at the Rialto Theatre. It'd be lovely to see you there.
It would indeed. And, moving on then. Al, you caught up with Adam Hinterwood this week, and this is what he had to say.
OK, well, here we are at Worthing's Woodside Road ground. It's Thursday night. What's going on here at the moment?
We just finished training. We had training with the 14s, 15s, 16s, and then quick turnaround for the first team. And then currently the youth team just warming up for an FA Youth Cup game against Cray.
Okay, I've noticed there's a fair few people here. Is that a common thing for the training sessions, or are they here for the game?
More so for the game than the training sessions. They're not that interesting to want to come watch them. But now the game, we've got some really talented young players, and we're delighted to have a good support for them.
Great stuff. Okay, so you're here at Worthing. We'll talk about the season in a minute, but tell us how you got this gig in the first place.
Yeah, well, I was obviously working full time with the younger players at Brighton, doing the under 18s with Ian Butman. But you know, I always felt that I enjoyed the managing and being a manager, and wanted to get into that side of it. And Dean White, ex-coach at Brighton, took me to Hastings. She'll come up and took me there. But living in Selsey as I do, and doing
quite a traipse, isn't it?
Yeah, doing the whole width of Sussex, if you like, on a regular occurrence, was being a bit of a toll on my family and stuff like that. And the job come available here back at Worthing. Knew the club really well, and they was really keen to get me back, and just a chance that I thought I had to take.
It's just a sort of win-win on all occasions. So tell us about the season you're having now. I've got to compare and contrast with last season, because last season you had a pretty disastrous start for reasons that weren't necessarily squad related, were they?
No, yeah, I mean, obviously we had problems with the pitch and had to move away from the ground. Obviously then us having such a bad start is the reason I probably got the job back like I did. So there went a few games without winning. So it was a tough task to come in. The morale and the whole everything off the place was on the floor, really. But we just come home, sort of brought in some younger local players that I knew that they would give their all for the club, and they've certainly done that. And gradually it took its time, but gradually we just kept believing in a certain shape that we installed, and it seemed to work well for us.
Yeah, because the first game I came to with with our friend Phil Shelley of oldfootballshirts.com, the Albion Raw sponsor, it was the game last season against the Met Police. I think it finished 3-3. But what struck me immediately was that the way that Worthing set up, the way they played, it was a cracking game, was that this was not a team at the bottom of the table. So, I mean, did you always feel that the problems with the pitch and playing away and other things, you know, were actually not necessarily representative of what you had at Worthing?
No, definitely that. I mean, there's a really big fan base at the club. Knew that if we could get it right, that they would come back. And, it's just with the sort of facilities and stuff we've got here, You know, the type of football I like to play, it sort of contrasts with the way that this club likes to play as well. They like producing young players, you know, same as I like giving young players an opportunity to play and shine. And it just sort of seemed to fit well. And I knew if we did get it right, it could lead to something special.
Because your form in the second half of the season was almost sort of promotion material, wasn't it? I mean, you sort of really did turn it around in that season. And I guess you've kind of taken that on in this season, because I think I read somewhere that you felt that, you know, the start, it wasn't exactly a sort of a high false start that you've made, but, you know, you've maintained your start to the season and you're sort of sniffing around the top places, aren't you?
Yeah, we've been fortunate with the start we've made. We made what we've done this year, I don't think... Teams are looking at us now and paying us a bit more respect, so they come in here and sort of sit in office. So people sort of contrasting our football to last season. Well, last season they was playing against a team that was bottom of the league, so they wanted to come here and knew they could. This was an opportunity for them to win, so they'd come at us a little bit more. Whereas that's changed completely on its head this year. Teams are sort of happy to come away with a point and any sort of point here now against us, which is compliment to the players that we've got, that they set up that way. But we've probably find it a bit difficult to adjust, and we maybe had to change our shape at home because of that. But yeah, it's been a different.
I mean, it's exciting times here, surely. I mean, the fact is that, you know, sort of you're what sort of in fourth, fifth place in the table at the moment, and you're definitely sniffing around. It's a great start to the season, and. If you look at the back end of last season, you probably get to realise that it's not necessarily that big a surprise.
No, that's right. Yeah. I mean, we've got a good group of players. They're fantastic. They really do work hard. And, you know, we've managed to add a little bit more experience in there, which does help. I think the difference I've noticed, you know, the younger players are that bit more experienced now and settled to the way we want to play. But also it helps when you're not at your best to grind out results. And I think we've done that well this year. We've a real tough team to play against. We haven't blown any team away. It's a bit like the Championship this league. If you look at the league table, anyone can beat anyone on the day, and there's not much points difference between the top teams up there. It's a tough league. But, yeah, we've managed to grind out results, and when we're not at our best, we're still a tough team to play against. And I think that's probably the difference between us this year to last year. We found a way, like we did at Lewis. We went down to 10 men, 3-2 behind, and managed to find a way with 10 men.
That
to
was a humdinger. I missed that one, but yeah. You know, there's a few of my friends when that was a bit of a humdinger in that
yeah,
game.
So, yeah, so
probably not great for the managers.
No, certainly not. It's probably why we're both bored. But we found a way to sort of grind out results when we're not sure. Our best, and I think that's a good sign of a good team and a good club that we're at.
Mm. Let's rewind sort of 10 and a bit years. You were in your early days at the Albion. Tell us about what it was like. We're looking around sort of 07, 08 kind of period that I want to sort of zero in on here. I appreciate you had a few injuries, but you were kind of very much the one of the staple players of the side when you weren't injured.
Yeah, it's like looking back on it, I just you know, mixed feelings really, because all you want to do as a professional footballer is be out there playing, and a lot of my career was spent watching my teammates perform and you know, watching them whilst I'm sort of in the portal cabin with Malcolm Stewart's dog most days, you know. So
Dr. Shipman.
Yeah, so it was tough. Tough times, really. So it's mixed sort of feelings, really, looking back on my career. You know, the highs, obviously, were brilliant, and, you know, playing and healthy and playing week after week, there's no better feeling. And, you know,
I think you were very much appreciated by the fans. I mean, you know, the fact is you're, you know, one of the local boys, you know, of which there was a fair few that had come through Dean Wilkins' system. And, you know, it was kind of a bit of a pride thing from our point of view that, you know, there was several people who were part of that system, of which you were one. And you know, so, you know, it's, appreciate you're saying mixed feelings, but from our point of view, you know, we always knew that and appreciated that you put in a shift.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't want that to sound too sort of sour. Obviously, no mixed feelings towards the club or whatsoever. The club were brilliant and, you know, the fan base was second to none.
And wet.
More so away from home back then. Yeah. I think, you know, we had a big contingent that come away to watch us, and it did give us a lift when we did go away. And you know, we did find it hard at times at Withdean, but great years, you know, to be part of that football club, and you know, the transition that it's made now is fantastic, and you know, really do wish him well. And but just looking back on my career, I just would like to have had that feeling of being fit for a longer period, because I thought there's only one real full season I had was the season we stayed up in the Championship, really. It's the longest sort of period of games that I had, and playing in my regular position, centre back. You know, we moved Danny Cullip on to Sheffield United, then went there and beat them 1-0, and playing as like a centre half alongside Guy Butters, and you know, we went to Tottenham and playing like a right sided centre half.
That was a great day. 21st birthday, that was.
If Carlsberg done 21st birthdays, that would be up there.
But it's one of those games where you realise that, you know, a Chippy's free kick, absolutely brilliant. But if you're going to lose to a big side, that goal that Robbie Keane scored, you think, okay, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, Guy couldn't have got no tighter to him, and he still found a way to put him in the top corner, you know, out of nowhere. So
I remember talking to the Spurs fans after the game, and they were sort of, you know, deeply impressed with the show that we put on that day.
Yeah,
on that day.
Oh, it was a great performance. We changed shape, went to like a three at the back, and I think it seemed to suit us, really. I remember when Steve Coppell came in and had to get results, he went to a three at the back as well. So I think we sort of had the personnel to sort of... you know, deal with that shape, and it was a good performance. We got our goal, which helps any game in that game against Tottenham, and you know, just a bit unfortunate on the day, but no, really good.
So the highlight was probably you mentioned that game. Was that your kind of highlight game of your career?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, you know, played in some big stadium, go to Sunderland away. I thought we was giving a good account of ourselves, and the gaffer at the time, Mark McGee, decided to change shape and go for the win, and we end up losing 2-0. But that's like, looking back on it, like now as a manager, you know, it's, you learn from that, don't you?
Absolutely.
Get that feeling about your team, whether you can. And great credit to Mark that he felt that we could go and hold our own against Sunderland and go and win the game. You know, we was more than happy with containing them at the time, and we was all setting our shape. And then I think he sort of maybe brought on like Leon Knight and Albert Jarrett and went for it a little bit, and ended up on the back of a 2-0. So,
but I don't think fans necessarily mind that, if you think, well, you know, the manager's going for it a little
bit.
No,
that's right.
You know, nothing to lose and things like that.
Yeah, just lots of highlights. But.
Sure. And you mentioned transition stuff. Now, obviously, one transition that I don't think probably the day he signed that you could ever realise was ever going to happen. And we've got now a record goal scorer at the Albion, Glenn Murray. And you were there when he started. Do you remember him turning up on his first day?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. This sort of big, loppy northerner coming down and just done everything at his pace. Like, he's just in no sort of hurry. He's got that sort of methodical sort of stroll about him, and he's Glenn. But, you know, you could see what a talent he was from the middle of the team. Yeah, in training, in some of his finishing. I mean, like I say, a lot of my... was watching Glenn because I was injured a lot of the time, but you know, I spent a bit of time in the treatment room with him and knew what a dedicated pro he was, and I'm so pleased and thrilled now that he's getting the accolades that, you know, we all thought he could do back then.
So it doesn't actually surprise you that he's got his tongue?
No, not really. I mean, you can see what good finisher.
He is older than you, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the weird, you know.
Him and Nicky Forster together at that time, I thought was a good combination. Obviously, Nicky was the old experienced one, and Glenn was a bit younger then. But
if only they learned the offside rule.
Yeah, true. But that's how they sort of played, really. They sort of played with that freedom, and they tried to, you know, play on their last defender as much as they can. They didn't always get it right, as it, you know, you mentioned Lean to there. But no, he's great. Someone I still sort of try and speak and stay in contact with now, Glenn.
Was he a pain in the backside to train against then?
I'll tell you what, like, to play with back then, I thought, what a lazy so-and-so. But, like, you see the way he sort of works now in the Premier League, and do you know what it is? He's clever. He don't run after things if he don't have to. He's done it since he was quite young, and he's almost played with that maturity from a young age, to be honest.
So he's always been 35.
Yeah, it seems like it. When you sort of like playing with him back then, even then, you thought you could chase after that and make that rubbish ball that I just put in the channel look half decent while you run after it. But you just let it go and just look at you with that, like, his arms up in the air. But he's no surprise, I mean, in the box. And then when I was back with the Albion, the things, good things that are said about like Ronaldo is how hard he used to work and stuff. The same could be said for Glenn. He was the one that was after training. Ben Roberts would just be fizzing balls into him, and he would just be constantly just working on that one touch finish, one touch, one touch. Sure. Similar to the one that got his 100th goal, really. Exactly, okay. Like that. Just fizzed in and he just directed it on goal.
Well, to be fair, fancy Wolves leaving someone like Glenn alone in the penalty area. I mean, did they not learn their lesson?
That's the thing. He's just so intelligent. He comes to life in the box. His movement, he's always like, he just gets the right side of the defender and really early. And like I say, it's no coincidence. Like any youngster, we try to say, just go and watch his movement in the box, because he really does come alive in the box. And, you know, he spends so much time practicing those one-touch finishes. People think, oh, he's lucky. You're not lucky. People miss those all the time. And he really does work on his game. And, you know, so full credit to him. And I'm delighted that people like that do that stuff that doesn't necessarily always get noticed. He was working hard on that behind the scenes, and I'm glad that you know, any youngsters out there, them sort of things do, you know, do reap their rewards.
Sure. Now, you mentioned rubbish balls earlier, a minute ago. I can't not talk about this.
I know.
Talk us through it.
Well,
it's to be fair, it's a toss-up for the own goal of Deco between yours and Colin Hawkins.
Yeah. I'd be happy to take it, to be honest. 100th game, no picture on the front of the programme. I think probably just shades it, to be honest. All my family there in attendance. But I will still say to this day, where the heck is John Sullivan going? You know, he's made the most ridiculous of angles. I think him and the goalkeeper coach at the time used to work on him making his angles, but without letting any of the defenders know. So, you know, you think they would work with it with the defenders. But, yeah, it's just one of those things. I've not even looked and just caught it, just a peach. And from the minute it's left my boot, I just knew it was in the back of the net, and he was never getting there. John, bless him, he couldn't move it.
It was probably just one of the furthest out goals that's ever been scored with Dean. Oh, that's Chris Eagles for Watford.
It's up there with Beckham. But, it's now like all my kids. It's the only thing they see on the internet. Dad, your own goal's got like 60,000 hits or something. Internet sensation, but obviously for all the wrong reasons. That's the only. Highlight of my career that they ever get to see, so that's all they know me for. So, yeah, it's obviously we went on to lose the game 2-1, and I got absolutely ribbed by Nicky Forster and Mickey Adams.
Yeah,
after that for a long time, to be honest.
For a long time, yeah.
The next few sessions is
to be honest, 10 years later, we're still talking about it.
They were sort of saying, we'll be right this week as long as Inch don't decide to score an own goal and we're winning 1-0. So, yeah, Yeah, and then I went to Aldershot, and I think I give away my first four games. Gave away 3 penalties in the first 4 games I was there, so that's up there with my career lows, to be honest. Those two things. Enough.
Well, you always for every own goal, there's always Spurs and Sunderland and all those.
That's
things.
It. Yeah, definitely.
Now back here at Worthing, there's obviously a few times when Albion are away, like for instance this weekend. We're away at Everton, so not everyone can make it. And I think there's probably, you know, that's a good time for, if anyone's got a sort of spare afternoon, Saturday afternoon, to go and see their local football side. So here we are at Worthing, and if you live near Lewis or near Whitehawk or Burgess Hill or whatever club is near to you, what would you say to those who are sort of thinking about it and aren't quite sort of sold on it?
I think you know, if you love your football and you're passionate about your football, then, you know, come and have a look, because I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with the actual quality and the passion and the desire. And it's not nowadays, you know, we've got 3G surfaces, it's not all about, you know, smash it from back to front and pick up second balls. And, you know, we still play with a bit of structure, and we've got some real talented young boys on show at the moment. Some, you know, big clubs are coming to show interest in them. So, you know, there could be a star of the future out playing in one of these games, and I'm pretty sure there will be. The clubs seem to be looking more and more at non-league to go, and you know, you maybe get a bit more sort of connection with the players and the club with a non-league club. Especially here, we like to get the fans to buy in, and that all the young fans go out on the pitch after the game, which is not the case at every club. But it's something that you know, we really feel gives us a bit of authenticity and a bit of uniqueness about us, that we're creating sort of memories for these kids. They're always going to remember coming to Woodside Road, watching Worthing, and then having a kickabout on the pitch after. Probably standing in the cold and just can't wait to get out on that pitch, but a few of them. But I think that's sort of what we're about. And I think, yeah, you can really, a lot of people that do come sort of buy into it. Oh, I wouldn't mind going again. So we just say, that's the only message I'll say, is just go and give it a go. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And for Albion season tickets holders, it's a fiver to get in. Adam Hinshelwood, thanks very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Raw.
No, absolute pleasure. Anytime.
Yes, that was Alan talking to Adam Hinshelwood at Worthing this week. Worthing are at home to Folkestone Invicta this Saturday, so if you're not going up to Everton, why don't you pop along and have a look there?
I'm loving the fact that Adam is still happy to talk about that own goal. I mean, you know, you can't actually erase it from your career. And I think there might be some people that say, look, you know, can we not talk about that? Can we talk about, I don't know, something else? But
I like the fact he called himself an internet sensation.
He is. Yes. I mean, it's... I even asked the quiz question of it. Is it the difference between Hawkins and Hinshelwood? So actually, very quickly, before we go on to the next thing, worst own goal with Dean, Hawkins or Hinshelwood?
Not a lot in it, is there?
Not
we'll,
as
we'll
such.
Give it to Hinshelwood as he wants the award.
Yeah. Okay. Well, talking about internet sensations,
yes.
we've got one in the studio with us here today in the shape
of privilege
Graham
to be sitting next to him,
Graham Rolfe. And Graham, now, 10 years ago, it was 10 years ago this week, the Diggers moved in to a field in Falmer. It was shortly after what game?
It was shortly after Leicester City at home.
Wow. That 3-2 game, was it?
It was, yes, a 3-2 game.
Oh, really?
We were 2-0 down at half-time. Yep. Matt Fryett scored both. With us, there was a Leicester fan, and he said, oh, Matt Fryett will rip you apart tonight. We're going, yeah. And he was right. And we thought, ah. But second half, the result that all football supporters love is you're 2-0 down at half time, you come back to win 3-2. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
I'm just trying to think who's
Bradley Johnson scored two, and then almost in the last minute, a Jack Hobbs own goal by Leicester give us the three.
Was it brilliantly done?
Yeah.
He's got it absolutely spot on. I've got it here.
I remember Bradley Johnson scoring one from the edge of the area, but that was it.
Yeah. He scored twice.
On North Stand chat, there was a chap who at half time
lost it.
He left and got straight onto his keyboard. We all know
that's in the gold section now, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And he went nuts on his keyboard.
That's it. I've had enough.
This is about an hour after the game had started, so there's still most of the second half to go. And then he missed one of the great nights at Withdean, of which there's two or three of them, and that was one of them.
Absolutely. But I mean, we haven't got much time left, so we're going
to... Okay, well, go
going
back
quickly,
to...
The team that day was John Sullivan, Adam Virgo, Andy Wing, Colin Hawkins, there we go, Tommy Elphick, Bradley Johnson, Steve Thompson, Robbie Savage, Kevin McLeod, Richard and Joey and Insar.
He got booked in Savage that night.
Did he?
So was it the next day then after that game that the Diggers? That,
it was.
Or as you used to call them, the new news.
It was the new news. Yeah, yes. It was the breaking ceremony was the next day. And they'd marked out what would be the pitch with the Diggers.
Yes,
and they made a great big goal with the Diggers, and basically they had
Dick Knight and
Martin Perry. And what can only be described as a Diana Ross moment.
It was a bit.
That may have been before.
That
I
was
took
before
my
your
first
photos. Yeah.
What I took was, it turned out to be the archaeological dig. But nevertheless, it was still the very first action
Did
on the site.
Did they find anything in the end? Or
soil. Know. A lot
right.
of soil.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Flints.
We thought there'd be a free Tony Newton or something.
No, Lord Lucan.
So, I mean,
oh, Shogar.
Tell us what happened. I mean, you were working at Stammer Park in those days.
My office was there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, there's a difference. Your office is there, I didn't say you were working there. I just go to the office that was there. Okay.
Yeah.
When you started with that first picture, did you actually think to go ahead and actually sort of, I've got to chronicle all of this, or was it just sort of, I'll turn up when... What was your thoughts at the time?
I did feel I was in a position to be able to do that. It was no problem for me because it was en route on the way back from work or on the way to it, depending on which route I took. So it wasn't going to be difficult for me to do so. So that's when it all began. And I know you are quite enamoured with the fact that, that the ladder played a huge part in it all. Well, but the ladder wasn't needed until after the hoarding went up.
Every Friday on NSC,
oh, yes.
Everyone got really excited about a bloke on a ladder peering over a fence. I mean, in other countries you get arrested for that. And but, I mean, and that person was
isn't huge. The step ladder in the museum now?
The step ladder, I left it when I retired. The ladder was still there behind my desk. I hadn't moved it. No, it stayed there. Where it is now, I don't know, because the office where I used to work has all been moved now down to Hollingdean, so we don't know.
But you chronicled all of this, and there was various classic moments along the way, and one of everyone's favourites has to be the bit when the arch arrived.
Can you tell us about the arch chase?
Go on.
Okay, the arch chase. I had a phone call from...
someone.
Nigel Summers. Because he used to take videos of what was going on as well. I did photos, he did videos. He rung me at the office and he said, I think I may have spotted a part of the arch in a lay-by on the A23. So I grabbed hold of my friend who I took home each night and said, come on, we're going for a ride. So we jumped in the car, zoomed off up the... A23, and after a few miles coming down the A23 was a huge great flatbed lorry with a massive great chunk of white metal on the back, and we thought, that's it. So we came off the very next junction, went over the A23 and then back down the southbound carriageway, and I hurtled down, keeping to the speed limit, I may add.
Sounds like a really bad Burt Reynolds
69.9 film. 69.9 miles an hour, and caught up with this lorry. It had an outrider, lots of flashing lights and red and yellow fluorescent markings on this car.
I remember this so well.
Brilliant.
And I managed to get my camera out. And
you weren't driving, were you?
Driving, and me and my friend between us, we managed to take several photos of this piece of architecture travelling down towards the rabbit roundabout.
What did the lorry driver think?
Well, we overtook him. we went up onto the A27, we went flying past him at 69.9 miles an hour, pulled into the lay-by, got out, lined up the camera, down he came, click, 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 jumped back in the car, overtook him again, got up to the stadium site.
He didn't call the police in all this time.
Well, no, he didn't, but apparently he made a comment after he'd stopped, and I was there and then taking photographs when he arrived, and he said to our friend Natajak, Norman, who spoke to him, he said, now I know what it's like to be chased by the paparazzi. So that was the story of the arch chase, and then so I put them on as a special sort of midweek arch chase special on North Stand Chat, and... it went down a treat, that one. So, yeah, that was great fun.
It wasn't like saying...
It's like
Dukes of Hazzard, wasn't it?
I mean, the fact you went on to actually sell calendars of this whole thing.
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed it. It was quite hard work, and it's quite hard work selling stuff to people.
Yeah.
So we raised quite a bit of money for the supporters club.
Sure.
And people are saying, when I posted the 10th anniversary bit that I did yesterday on North Stand Chat, I've still got my calendars.
Brilliant.
You know, I said, well, you know, they could
they're
become collector's items.
I think there are many. I think Graham is going to donate one to the raffle at the live show, which will be at Rialto on the 12th of December. But that is all we've got time for this week. So if you want to hear more from about Graham's stories from there, he has been on a couple of times before. One more thing, go on.
Well, one more thing. I couldn't help noticing what the modern technology in this beautiful studio, they've soundproofed the room. And I noticed you're wearing a jumper, which is also made of the same material.
Yeah, I'm not soundproofed.
So, sadly,
Graham, we can still hear him.
But I have been Ailey Packham. That has been Alan Wares. That has been Graham Rolfe. We've also heard from Adam Hinchwood, so thanks to him. This has been The Album Raw. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.
Now there are three steps to heaven.
Just listen, and you will plainly see. And as life travels on, and things do go wrong, just follow steps one, two, and three. Step one, you find a brotherhood of love. Step two, she falls in love with you. Step three, you kiss and hold her tightly. Yeah, that sure seems like heaven to me. The formula for heaven's very simple. Just follow the rules and you will see. And as life travels on and things do go wrong, just follow steps one, two, and three. Step one, you find a girlhood. Step two, she falls in love with you. Step three, you kiss and hold her tightly. Yeah, that sure seems like heaven to me. Just follow